This is episode number 648 of the Inner Fight Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Inner Fight Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, downloading, listening, watching, whatever you're doing. Appreciate your time. Also appreciate the time and the effort of our show sponsor, Smith Street Paleo. Please do hop over to smithstreetpaleo.com. Check out all the recipes. Drop them an email. Hello at smithstreetpaleo.com. Ask them about meal plans. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can still cook good, healthy paleo food. Go get it. Thank you to our show sponsors, Smith Street Paleo. This week is all about the Olympics and some of my thoughts on the future of the Olympic Games. The Olympic Games, what does it mean to you? What memories do you have of the Olympic Games? For me personally, I have a number of different memories growing up, and those, some of those I'm going to share with you guys. What prompted me to record this show and to dig a little bit deeper into this, which has been a whole lot of fun. Obviously, a lot of time when I'm doing podcasts, I'm speaking to other people, so I'm researching them, finding out information about them, and then grilling them or just questioning them all about it. But obviously, when I do a show on my own, I have to research a topic, unless it's something that I really think I know a lot about, and then I genuinely just pretty much ad lib it. Anyway, that's something for another day. But this was really super interesting for me. And it was actually prompted by an article that I got through The Economist a few weeks ago. And this was talking about basically what the next Olympics might include. And the title was Why the Next Olympics Should Include Fortnite. And I sort of stopped and I looked at it and I was like, wow. And the medal was actually the console of a, I don't know what you'd call it, PlayStation or whatever they play these games on. It was a game controlling console. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And there were some cool stats in there. And I sort of started reading around it. And like 30 minutes later, I've got all these different ideas. I'm like, we have to put this into a podcast. Hopefully it's useful for you guys. It's been a super, super interesting exercise for me, and I hope it provides some thoughts and stimulates a little bit of thought into the way that the world's going and what we actually genuinely might see in, well, 4 years from now when the next Olympics comes. I'll talk about this year's Olympics and what's going to happen there, but also fast forward maybe 20 years. Now, if you'd have told me when I was younger, watching the Olympics with my dad, that I would be making, mum was there as well, making a show about this and about the future of the Olympics and some of the stats that I'm going to go through today, some 20 or 25 years later, I'd think that you were absolutely crazy, because I always thought that the Olympics was the Olympics and it was rooted in so much history and had sort of such a great meaning to it. But when I was reading through, and maybe I shouldn't believe what I read in The Economist, but when I was reading through it, I was like, wow, there could be changes on the horizon, and I'm not really sure how I feel about it. However, let's just go back a little bit to understand what really is the Olympic Games. Well, simple wiki search says their creation was inspired by the ancient Olympic Games, ancient Greek, which were held in Olympia, Greece, from the 4th century BC to the 4th century AD. Long, long time ago. In 1984, the International Olympic Committee, which we hear a lot more about these days, have done for a number of years, the IOC was formed, leading to the first modern games. And that's really where we see the start of this, where it's defined as the modern games, which started in 1984. Six. And the IOC, as I said, is the governing body of what's known as the Olympic movement, with the Olympic Charter defining its structure and authority. So it's quite well defined, shall we say. The most famous Olympics, and there's different ones that are now out there, is the Summer Olympics. We also have the Winter Olympics, and there's 2 years difference between those two. The Olympic Games and Olympic Games will come around every 4 years. And there's actually another thing that I found out. The interval is 4 years based on the four interval between the ancient games editions, was named an Olympiad and was used for dating purposes at the time. Time was counted in Olympiads rather than years. So those of you that are wondering where the Olympiad comes from, Olympics come from, yes, Olympia is a place in Greece, but this was also a measurement, a unit of time, which is why they are 4 years apart. There's a lot of stats in here. If you want to check them for yourself, do. And if I screw anything up, I really do apologize in advance. I'm just doing my best. So we've got the Summer Olympics and the Winter Olympics. So the Summer Olympics would take place, if it was going to take place this year, 2020. Winter Games would come in 2022. And then we would see the Summer Games come in 2024. The Summer Games are not happening this year. As I said, more about that a little bit later. We then have different types of games as well, where we also have Special Olympics, we have the Deaf Olympics, and we have the Paralympics. I think they were the big three that I found. And to be honest, the Olympic Games, the logo of the Olympic Games is representing, basically, they put it together. It has a white background and the five interlaced rings in the center, which are, anyone knows, a little bit of general knowledge, but some people might know, blue, yellow, black, green, and red. And this design is actually quite symbolic, as it represents the five continents of the world, which come together, and that's why they're joined. These rings are all joined together. They are united by Olympism. While the six colors are those that appear on the national flags of the world at the present time. So that's why you get that Olympic Games logo. And that logo has, I guess, I'm not sure it's just in the modern era, but we do see a number of Olympians, which once they represent their country in the Olympics, will tattoo those rings on themselves, be it in the same colors, which is blue, yellow, black, green, and red, or just in normal, whatever color you'd call it, a tattoo is. So that's a little bit of a background on the Olympics. In the number of sports that are involved in the Summer Olympics actually has been fluctuating, and this sort of leads a little bit into what we're going to talk about later as well, that for, I think, in, if I remember rightly, in 2016 games, there was about 28 different sports in the Olympics, and there was planned for the 2020 Summer Olympics to be 33 different sports. Now, sports will come and will go from the Olympics. We've definitely seen this before. I remember when, I think the first time just a few years ago, it might have been 2016 or it might have been 2012, when rugby sevens was included in the Olympics or taken back to the Olympics. I'm not sure if it was the first time or it'd been there before. Didn't do research on that, but I know that one off my head. And basically, some sports will come into the games and some sports will also leave the games. So, and this is based, from what I see, on two different levels. One, I think there's a little bit of popularity of the sport in a certain country that is going to be hosting the Olympics, which they would know that anywhere between 4 to 6 years in advance. It's 6 to 8 years in advance. And therefore, if a lot of that population are interested in a certain sport, then we would see that sport included in the Olympics. Some of the more well-known ones, obviously for the Summer Olympics, the athletics, the sport of athletics. So there's 28 or 33 this coming Olympics. Athletics is counted as one sport. So they don't count the 100, 200. They count athletics as one sport. But some very interesting sports, and all of these, well, a number of these sports, definitely at the Olympics, is amateur level, but a lot of them are amateur sports, which makes athletes' participation in these sports at such a high level and with such great times or skills, no matter how things are measured within their sport, it makes it quite remarkable because they're all amateurs, or for the most part, they're amateurs. Obviously, in the modern era, that's also changed as well because, for example, there is road cycling in the Olympic Games, and outside of it. And we've seen people like top cyclists that will go and represent their country in road cycling. They might not necessarily get paid a whole chunk of money for doing that. That would be seen as, and it always has been seen as, quite an honor to represent your country in the Olympics. It's the Olympics, after all. It's huge. So they wouldn't be necessarily paid for their performance in the Olympics, but they are professional athletes outside of that. However, perhaps, and only because it's the A on the list, archery, we might not have people that are full-time professional archers outside of the Olympics. So it would be a fully amateur sport. Really interesting. I'm going to rattle some of these off. Some of them you'll know: archery, artistic swimming. So that is things like synchronized swimming, badminton, baseball or softball, basketball, beach volleyball. I think that was an inclusion in recent times. I can't remember exactly when it first entered into the Olympics, but I do remember that when it did come, volleyball made its Olympic debut actually in 64. So I don't even remember. Beach volleyball maybe was different. Anyway, we shall move on. Beach volleyball, boxing, we've seen in the Olympics for quite a long time. We've seen a lot of boxers make their name in the Olympics and then become professionals. They've got two types of canoeing, slalom and sprint. Slalom I love to watch. BMX cycling, mountain biking, road cycling, track cycling. So four different things on two wheels, on bikes. Diving, I always really, really enjoyed watching the diving. Incredible, these super high boards. Equestrian dressage, not really my bag, but a lot of skill. Incredible watching humans operate horses, if that's the right way to say it. Two other types of equestrian. One is eventing, the other is jumping. And then some interesting things, or one that I've always found interesting and only really ever seen it in the Olympics, is fencing. We also have football, which I think is an interesting sport because the World Cup, Premier League, always seems bigger than the Olympics. So, which kind of conflicts what I said earlier about this being the pinnacle of a particular sport. A lot of these guys are not super interested in playing football in the Olympics. Interestingly, golf, gymnastics, two different types of gymnastics, handball, hockey, judo, karate. We see quite a few of these martial arts in there. Marathon swimming, modern pentathlon, which is slightly different. Swimming, fencing, horse riding, shooting, and running. Rowing, for me, absolutely huge. I've loved that. British rowing has been phenomenal. Steve Redgrave was one of our greatest Olympians ever, one of my early childhood memories, and they're repeating thereafter every 4 years is watching Redgrave trying to get a rowing medal, and that has been pioneered actually by Jürgen, the German coach, fun stat. And obviously we heard more about that in, I think, the three appearances that Cameron Nicholls been on the podcast. Carrying on, rugby is in there, and I'm pretty sure it's sevens, not 15s. Then there's sailing, shooting, believe it or not, skateboarding, sport climbing, there's surfing, so you need to be able to surf, swimming, table tennis. Awesome watching table tennis. Swimming's actually one of the big ones as well. Michael Phelps, obviously, one of the most successful Olympians of all time. The most gold medals. Table tennis, love it. Love watching it. Also, and I brushed over it earlier, but badminton, absolutely awesome sport to watch in the Olympics. This is the only real time that we get to watch those sports. Taekwondo, another one of the martial arts. Tennis, I think, was Andy Murray, he made that a little bit interesting, but of not really, don't, my childhood memories or my Olympic memories are not really of tennis. Trampolining, however, I found interesting. Triathlon, also found interesting. And then, as I said before, volleyball is in there, as well as beach volleyball. So maybe volleyball was traditionally in there and then beach volleyball came later. Water polo, again, something you generally wouldn't watch, but it's in the Olympics and very interesting to watch. Weightlifting, if you're a little bit more interested these days in the clean and jerk and the snatch, then you would have an interest in the weightlifting. And the last two here on the Olympic Games website is wrestling freestyle. And I've never, ever heard of this before. Wrestling Greco-Roman. So obviously two different types of wrestling there as well. Wow, that's a lot of different sports. And to be honest, yes, I like a few of them. A lot of them, I actually like all of them. But when they come around every 4 years, and when really, I only really see them televised around the period of the Olympics, it makes it a little bit special. But to me, the special ones are always going to be athletics and rowing. And why is that? Well, and this is where I want to share a little bit of my personal experience of the Olympics. I've never been to watch the Olympic Games live in person. I have only watched it on television, and I have some great memories watching it with my dad. Mom was there as well, and my sister, and we'd watch the athletics every single time. And the main events really of athletics is sort of the 100, and then 5K and 10K is super, super interesting as well, and the marathon. We'd probably cover those four off. And you go through the heats of the hundreds. And I just remember so clearly as a kid, I was growing up when Linford Christie was the man. And I remember watching him in Barcelona in, I think it was 92. So a lot of really, really good memories sort of ingrained for me around the Olympics and watching athletics. And then obviously in that same event, 100 meters, Usain Bolt has sort of stolen the show of the last few Olympics. And rowing, the great British team have been strong forever. And I guess this is where, and those of you that have listened to the show before have heard me speak about being sort of a product of your environment. You know, I'd watch this stuff with my dad when I was younger, and it just sits with me the whole time now, and it's absolutely incredible. And really, when the Olympics are on, I make sure I'm watching those events, and they're the ones that really, they mean the most to me because of the memories around them. Now, I think, you know, there's probably events and Olympics that you guys can remember. Maybe it means something to you, maybe it doesn't, but just have a think about how special the Olympic Games is. And also when you meet an Olympian or when you hear of an Olympian, the amount of time they put in, and absolutely incredible. They can spend up to 4 years obviously training, or they would compete, but it's 4 years between races to win that prize, an Olympic gold. And there is not much that can replace it. And I think that's what makes the Olympics so special. It was where it came from and what it was all about from the start, and the power of an Olympic medal, be it bronze, silver, or gold. Obviously, gold is what everyone is looking forward to. But what about the people who have been training for the last 4 years only to have their events pushed back now another year? And if you take someone like Steve Redgrave, his fifth Olympics was probably pushing things quite far. Given that he won his first medal when he was about 18 or 20, we're talking about 20 years on. He's still in the sport, still training hard, and still getting in the boat for the Olympic Games. It is reality that some of the Olympians this year could have been their last year. And now, how will they make it to next year, or how will they feel about that being next year with the fact that we've had to delay, or the Olympics have had to be delayed? It's only happened, and let me just grab it up here. World Wars led to the cancellation of the 1916, 1940, and 1944 games, and large-scale boycotts during the Cold War limited participation in the 1980 and the 84 games. So they are the main ones. The games have never grown to the gross. Where is it? Yeah, so basically that is where the interesting stat as well, before we continue with the 2021 games due to the COVID pandemic, over 14,000 athletes competed at the 2016 Summer Olympics and 2018 Winter Olympics combined in 35 different sports over 400 events. And it goes on to say here that obviously most important part, or a very important part, is the first, second place. They get their medal. So what's happening now that the Summer Olympics that were supposed to be in Tokyo will start basically really almost a year from now? They will start on the 23rd of this show's airing on the 16th. So actually within a week of this show, plus a year. So basically the Olympics should be starting now. So it's quite fitting we're talking about this right now. They will be pushed back a year. Imagine what that does to the athlete themselves, the preparation. If you're coming towards the end of your career, if you're a Steve Redgrave, you've been in that boat for 20 years and now you have to continue that training for a year. And obviously, I think the decision was made in March or April of this year. So they've already done an incredible amount of training, their dreams, and now they have to deal with it. So if you think you have a problem and you're sort of a big deal because you can't go on holiday or you can't commit to a race and it's really playing with your mind, just think about these guys who've been training, some of them for a lifetime, all of them for up to 4 years, and now their event has been put back. Your problem's not that bad after all, is it? Anyway, moving on to the article that I read that, as I said at the start, really sort of made me think about this topic and where's it really going? We've seen where it came from. I've explained sort of my early childhood memories of the Olympics, what's important to me. Obviously, everyone has a different sport that they're interested in. I remember when I used to work for Oakley, we used to work with some athletes that did trap shooting. Everyone works super hard to get to the games. But are times really changing? Is this article, why the next Olympics should include Fortnite, is it really important? And then it, just under it, it says, and this was on June the 27th that this article came out, if dressing and curling are Olympic sports, why not include video games? What do we think about this, ladies and gentlemen? I'm not too sure. However, some of the stats is that these things, electronic sports such as Fortnite, are vastly, this is a word from economists, they use quite good words, more popular than Olympic oddities such as dressage or curling. Don't disagree. In fact, they are more popular than most mainstream sports. Only, and this is crazy, 28% of British boys aged 16 to 19 watch any traditional live sports. So 28%, less than 30% of 16 to 19 year old boys watch any traditional live sports. 57% of those boys 16 to 19 play video games. Now, a little bit about my background on video games. I never played them. I think there's two reasons. The one reason is when I was brought up here in Dubai, there was really no television. There was no video games back then. There was no television. We're outside playing the whole time. So it wasn't really a choice. It wasn't really an option. Obviously, that's changed massively, massively now. And the way that video games are marketed, so for me, I don't really care about video games. I've never owned an Xbox. I've never owned a PlayStation. I think I had Game Boy once. Mum and Dad got me a Game Boy because when I was traveling back and forth to boarding school, it kept me entertained on the aeroplane, because when we initially were going to boarding school, we used to have to go on British Airways or Gulf Air via Bahrain, and it was an incredibly long flight, and if I didn't have a Game Boy, I'd probably cry all the time because I was missing my mum. So I was lucky to be gifted a Game Boy for my entertainment, but that was it. And when I was at home, I wasn't allowed to play it. I was only really allowed to play it on the aeroplane. But I've never really had it. So I don't really have, and maybe this has skewed my opinion slightly, you might say, but I've never really had any sort of feelings towards these games, although I know it is a massive part of people, of culture of youth these days. And that's what we're seeing here in that stat, that 57% of 16 to 19-year-olds actually play video games, which really isn't super surprising. It's marketed towards kids, and I think there's a lot of peer group pressure going on here as well. But wow, the fact that they're not watching sport means that they might not be participating in sport, which means that they're sitting down playing these video games. I'm not super surprised that we've got problems with sedentary lifestyle. We've got problems with obesity. We've actually got a lot of problems because people are not moving. One of the things that used to happen when I'd watch Linford Christie run that 100 meters or when I'd watch Steve Redgrave absolutely empty himself in that boat was I just want to go out. I want to play sport. So I see a massive positive correlation for myself and also for the youth of today if they were to watch sport. But it's absolutely not happening. And that's why there's calls now for things like Fortnite to be in the Olympic Games. There's also, as we go through this article, another interesting stat. There are perhaps only 200 tennis stars in the world who can make a living from playing in tournaments. By contrast, League of Legends, a fantasy game played between teams of five, supports over 1,000 people on good wages. Its World Championship final last year was watched by 44 million people. So, are our habits changing a little bit? Is what we consume changing? The answer is clearly yes. 44 million people watched the final of League of Legends last year, and over 1,000 people make a living out of playing League of Legends compared to 200 tennis stars. Roger Federer is still my favorite, obviously. New brand ambassador for On Running. And I heard just before I started recording the show that On Running, which is the shoes that I use, Cloud Flow, if you want a pair, are floating the company. It's going public. Niche Swiss brand. I'm not sure how I feel about it. Anyway, Roger Federer makes his money through being a tennis star and being one of the most successful tennis stars ever. He's one of only 200, whereas over 1,000 people are making money from League of Legends. Now, that's just the reality. And I think that's one of my main sort of points is that, yes, things are definitely changing because our habits are changing. What we enjoy is changing. Not everyone wants to get outside and emulate the speed that I saw Linford Christie running at and his incredible physique that as a youngster I always just was like, I need to look like Linford Christie. He is, what did you say, he's almost the ultimate male. That is changing because kids are not that interested in watching TV anymore. They don't watch live sport. Instead, they play Fortnite, which, yeah, it's super weird. I don't even really know what League of Legends is. I did a lot of research on Olympics. But I've heard of Fortnite, and I've heard of a lot of bad things about Fortnite, the way that it's addictive, the way that it costs money, the way that there's certain bullying around it if people are not playing it within schools. I don't think that's too much different from sports. I think in sports there was bullying, people getting laughed at, people with better skills than others were giving each other a hard time. That happened in our school. Some sports I was better at than others, and I felt a lot more confident. And other sports I got laughed at. And would you call it bullying? Yes, you would to a certain extent. So I think that sort of behavior and mocking other humans because of their lack of skill, whether it's a good thing or not, I don't think it is. But I think it goes on. In no matter what, so if it's in Fortnite, League of Legends, or in the schoolyard, that's going to happen. But at the same time, that's really where the attention is, and that's what people are playing. So I think the world definitely is changing. What people want and what people are gaining satisfaction from are these games, and you can't blame that 1,000 people that make money from League of Legends to be sitting at home all day playing League of Legends. Now, some of them, I'm not saying that all of them are overweight and, you know, one hand on the controller and the other hand in the popcorn or the 2 liter soda. Some of them might be incredibly fit. Some of them might be super fit. They might have sports that they play as well, but where their attention is sitting is definitely in that area. And this kind of moves to my next point as well, that some sports have come into the Olympics and some sports have left the Olympics. As I said before, 28 sports were in the 2016 Olympics, and in the 2020 Olympics, there's supposed to be 33 sports. So sports will come and sports will go. What we generally see, though, is that the sports are traditional physical sports. Now, I tried to look for some information, and maybe I didn't look hard enough, so slight disclaimer there, but for the qualification of a sport, does it need to be a physical sport? Because all the sports that I read out, all the sports that we're seeing are all very, very physical sports. I don't know if we've had chess in the Olympics before, for example. That's a very mental sport. Yes, it includes you having to move your hand, but it's not really going to take you out of breath unless... Is there such a thing as extreme chess? I don't know. You get my point. These are physical sports. So, and that was what I was kind of thinking, is the byproduct of sport on people physically and therefore mentally, as opposed to the byproduct of gaming, is very, very different. In my opinion, in sport, we stand up, we move around, we expend energy, we generally stay fit and healthy. Yes, not every single person in every single sport, and some sports are in great physical shape, and some sports at the top level. We saw this before. Was it the Michael Phelps diet with all the pizza, something like that? Very, very unhealthy, because he was just trying to get all these calories in. Was that what we really think he was eating? Not too sure. But what are the byproducts of these two, gaming against a physical sport? That's kind of what's coming into my head when I'm thinking about this, what could potentially be the fallout. And is it the gaming that makes the people fat? Is it the fact that they're sitting the whole day, or is it the fact that, as I alluded to earlier, they're holding the control in one hand and the other hand is reaching down for the French fries or whatever it is. Is that even possible? I don't know. Can you play Fortnite with one hand whilst drink Pepsi and super upsize with the other? I'm not really sure. I'm a little bit out of my depth on that side of it. And as we come sort of towards the end of the show, I have to admit, I haven't researched that side, because my passion is more in maintaining the Olympics and the more traditional side of things, whilst I totally understand that there is a commercial case, not that the Olympics should be viewed as commercial, but the attention of people is definitely moving, or has moved already. And that's really what this article is saying, that it's kind of moved to these sides. It's moved to kids gaming rather than watching sport on TV. It's moved to kids having these different choices, because those choices were available and they weren't so much available when I was young. So we turn on the BBC, listen to a guy who we had on the podcast, or they had on the Run Strong podcast a few weeks ago, and I did a little few outtakes from it, listening to the voice of Brendan Foster and being excited to listen to the voice of Brendan Foster presenting the Olympics. That was entertainment for me, but maybe that boat's already sailed. It's interesting. And it goes on to say here, commercial pressure can make for livelier entertainment. Having a video game named as Olympic sport would be a huge prize. Companies would vie to create games as exciting to watch as they are to play. This sounds like a recipe for fun. Those who disagree can always watch the 20,000 meter speed walk. Put Fortnite in the Olympics and millions will tune in who might not have otherwise bothered. They might even stumble across a traditional sport and decide to try it too. And if the experiment fails, no matter, the Olympic Committee could drop it in 2024, as it previously dropped croquet, tug of war, and, which is weird but makes sense, solo synchronized swimming. And that's where this article ends. And as I come close to the end of this particular show, that is a really interesting thought to leave you guys with. And that's why I read it at the end. And I want to read it one more time. The Olympics already generates billions from broadcasting and sponsorship. Commercial pressure can make for livelier entertainment. Having a video game named as Olympic sport would be a huge prize. These guys are in favor of it. Companies would vie to create games as exciting to watch as they are to play. Now it gets a little bit more interesting, right? If people want to watch it, but then would they really want to do what it's going to say in a second? Or would they want to play that game? This sounds like a recipe for fun. Those who disagree can always watch the 20,000 meter speed walk. Put Fortnite in the Olympics and millions will tune in who might not have otherwise bothered. Very true. I agree. And it's great. But would they tune in and just watch Fortnite? Or would they do what it's saying here? They might even stumble across a traditional sport and decide to try it too. And if the experiment fails, no matter, they can pull it out. Which is, that bit's kind of quite true. The IOC can just pull out what they don't want in or what isn't working. That's the argument. That's my for. That's their against. It's almost like a debate, isn't it? I think it would be sad. And in my summary, that's what I want to share. I think we know that the world is changing, but there are some great, great traditions in this world. The Olympics, as I started out by saying, was something that was founded centuries ago. It's always meant so much to so many people. Yes, we have to evolve as humans. Yes, we have to change. And yes, the commercial side of life, of business, and of the Olympics is something to take into consideration. Would those people really continue to watch equestrian, archery, athletics, and be inspired? Maybe a chance, maybe a small percentage. If there's 100 million that tune in to watch Fortnite, maybe a couple of them will stay and watch and be inspired, and that would be amazing. But really, for me, and call me old school, I'm not sure how it sits. Not super well. I know the stats are there, and normally when there's stats, I can be bowled over and I can be convinced, and I'll agree with the argument. But in this case, I think something as almost sacred and traditional as the Olympics should be protected. However, what do I think will happen? I think in 10 years, 8 years from now maybe, in 12 years from now, we'll probably see this. That's the way it'll go. Hopefully we have a positive outcome. Thanks a lot for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show. Let me know your thoughts. winning@innerfight.com. I'd love to hear from you. And until next time, have a think about the Olympics. What did it mean to you as a child? What does it mean now? And where is it going? Have a great day.